Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's December 4th, 2015. You're listening to the best poker cast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Cord-Cutted Long.
Cord-Cutted.
See, you know, the behind the scenes, we never do the any poker cast behind the scenes show, right?
Yeah.
One of the things is going to be, hey, Scott, be sure you unplug your phone and turn your phones off.
Right.
And so, but now I don't have to worry about unplugging my house phone because I no longer have a house phone.
That's right.
And I'll pause for the immense laughter from all of our listeners out there that are like realizing that they're listening to a show with two people who have landlines in the year 2015. Now down to one. Finally got rid of it, so it's saving me a lot of time in the pre-show preparation now.
Well, you know, my landline, I thought about getting rid of it because I'm like, this just cable and internet's just getting ridiculous. So they got the triple package. Let's get rid of the phone and save some money. The guy's like, yeah, you'll save about $9.99 a month.
Yeah, well, that was just it. I mean, for the longest time, it was $5 a month.
Yeah, it's just not worth it.
And I'm like, for $5, I mean, there's all kinds of reasons to keep it, I thought, right? But now we swapped internet providers, and then so from the phone company to an actual internet company. Call the phone company. I'm like, yeah, can I keep that $5 deal? Like, no, it's gonna be $31 now.
Oh,
I'm like, no, click, thank you. So yeah, so now I'm just slapping around with my cell phone now. So
yeah,
I don't have to worry about the ringing in the background anymore. Sorry,
that's
folks.
Cool. So I'll tell you, turn off your. I can tell you, turn off your cell phone now.
Yes, but yeah. I already did that.
So. I can still be anal about that, but well, it's good to have you back where yes. Your landline no longer exists.
It's very good to be home, and then I leave again today, but just for a couple days, but for fun. But yeah, it's been a long time on the road these last couple of months for me. So, but a lot of fun. You know, we had those back-to-back cruises, and then I was just out in California for the last week at Thunder Valley. As folks know from listening to last week's show, wrapped up yet another Ante Up Poker Tour event. This was the fourth Ante Up NorCal Classic, and probably the best. Well, not even probably the best yet we've had. Lots of smiles from the staff there. Players loved it. We had amazing people show up, which we'll talk about a little bit later. And it's really cool that this is where the NA Poker Tour started 4 years ago. And we've come this far. And Thunder Valley, the great host, has come this far as well, too.
It's crazy. I know we mentioned this last week, but the time that's flying by, it's just crazy. Every time you say the fourth Ante Up NorCal,
yeah.
I'm like, there's just no way we've had four of these.
4 years there, yeah.
It's crazy.
It's six vents, and it's just funny. I just walk around that place, and I know it. I mean, I was telling you, you know, I get the elevator, you have to use your room key to pick the door, so I'm like the doorman now there, and people I can see are confused. Oh, hey, put the card in. Oh, yeah, wait for it's green. It's a little tricky. And then push the button, and they're like, thank you. I'm like, so, you know. I even turned on the steam room this time, my little spa tent.
Yeah, yeah.
There. I got in the steam room. I'm like, hey, there's no steam. I went out and pushed the buttons. Hey, I got steam.
You're gonna, if they kick the bucket, they're going to name it the Scott Long Memorial Steam Room.
Exactly. I'm just gonna. They should just put me on the payroll there. Because
that's right. The people are tipping you dollar chips on the way to the elevator.
Hey, oh, it's right down there, turn to the left. Hey, thanks.
Make sure you try the au juice.
Yes. I don't believe they had au juice. Hell.
Oh.
But anyhow, so we had a lot of fun out there, and lots of stuff to talk about. And for folks that don't really care when we, you know, bluster about our Ante Up stuff, don't worry, we got some interesting poker stuff to talk about while we're blustering about our Ante Up stuff.
Right.
So the main event actually ended in an 8-way chop. First time ever we've had a main event that had that big of a chop. We've had one that was a 3-player chop
right.
In California
yeah.
A few years ago, which was very interesting how we split it up. This time an 8-way deal. I was watching it for a while. It was got down to like one away from the final table. My phone was kind of dead, so I went up to the hotel room to charge it for a little bit. And they get a text. Hey, it's over.
Like, wow.
What? Like, it can't be over.
Let me guess. These eight guys were from Florida.
Yeah, I know. That's right. That's what you would think in Florida, right? Not a single one of them.
That's right. It's amazing.
So I run down there, and I'm like, what happened to the, you know, why? And they're like, oh, hey, what do you do? I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Wow. So anyhow, the chip leader, who is our designated champion, because we always make it clear that we're only putting one face on the cover of the magazine every month.
Right.
Is Andy Pham. He's a regular there at Thunder Valley. Everybody knows him. He plays there all the time. People love him. And so he is the chip leader and declared the winner. And everybody got a decent amount of payday out of it. I think his share was just north of $30,000 or something like that. First place was going to be $53,000, $54,000, something like that.
Right.
So obviously they're all very happy with the deal because, again, as we mentioned, Thunder Valley does that anonymous card thing. So if you don't like the deal, you don't have to take it. And no one knows it's you, right?
Right.
So everybody must have been happy with it. And obviously Andy was too. He said, you know, he was hoping to get 30 out of it, and that's what he got. So, but it did raise some questions. One of the top players in Northern California who played actually fired two bullets in the main event. Ended up fourth or fifth in our Player of the Year. Sean Drake, great player, great guy. He actually went to our Facebook page and some other places to say, hey, an eight-way chop in a championship event? That just shouldn't happen. And so he was asking, is this really the new wave of poker where players are just scared to play it out even in the biggest events?
It's possible. I mean, it happens a lot. I made the joke about Florida because it happens every tournament in Florida practically. So it might be. It might be just a...
Florida, we've had like 21 player chops.
Yeah, we've had...
I don't even know how you negotiate
that. Yep, we've had 18 player, 15 player. I remember those from just specific things that we've either covered or had in the magazine. And, you know, here's the thing. In the old days, and I'm not speaking from experience because in the old days I didn't play poker, but in the old days, these guys, there weren't that many poker players, there weren't that many poker tournaments, and they were doing it for a living, and they were paying their bills with it, and they needed a lot more money, so they felt it was huge ego. They all thought they could win. So back then, when they played. You know, now, a lot of the people playing poker now...
It's all about the Benjamins?
Or what? Yeah. But they're numbers people, too.
Right.
You know, how many people... I mean, when you think about it...
This was a chip equity job, too, I should say.
Yeah, so they're thinking, well... But that's not what I mean. That doesn't matter. If they know they can lock up a certain amount of money now without any kind of variance interfering with their chance to win more money or that amount.
Right.
You know what I mean? They're all about numbers. A lot of people are about numbers now and edges and stuff.
Well, I'll say an offshoot of what you're saying, too, is I think until this ICM idea came about and most chops were all even chops... I don't think that would have happened in an event like this. But I actually think that's probably the issue now is people are getting so used to ICM and, you know, figure, hey, you know, I'm going to get about the same kind of money and save 8 hours of playing, so why not take the deal, right?
Yeah.
And if they didn't allow that and it was just an even chop, or no, I should say if they didn't allow that, but if no one ever invented ICM or chip equity, then these things would be playing out more. So I think that's really it. I could be wrong, but... you know, it's a little tougher. I mean, I know people that will never chop. You know, one of our cruise passengers this last time was a great player, designed never chop, and didn't in our cruise tournament end up winning it. But I think it's different when you get the ICM now, so you had to figure that out. And if you're an overwhelming chip leader, you might end up with first place money without even having to play.
Right.
So at that point, it's hard to criticize for someone to take a deal, right?
Right. Well, what if that happens where the guy wants to chop, and the ICM indicates that he would win more than what first place was, and you can't get more than what first place was. So does he then
absolutely.
Not? You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's just ridiculous. I understand why the ICM seems to make it makes it fair, that's for sure. It makes you know that you're getting what you deserve where you are. And you're probably right. That's probably the reason people see, hey, this is absolutely fair to me, and I don't want to take the chance with the blinds being so high and my stack being so low. Let's just go with this. I'll take my money and run. And it just seems like that's the way we are now. There's so many events, so many things that you can take that money now and go enter another event with it. You know, it's just in the old days, there weren't that many events. So you wanted to, you know, make it last. I mean, you wanted to win. And
yeah,
so,
and certainly one of these considerations is what the blind levels are at. So, you know, we've always talked about if you're down to bingo, then that's when you definitely should be chopping because, you know, why? There's no skill left at that point, right?
Right.
But when I get down, first thing I got down when I got to the poker room and I looked up, and I don't remember the actual number, so I don't want to guess, but it was phenomenally great play still left.
Right, right.
Like everybody had like 300 big blinds at least or something. It was a great structure that Ben Irwin and the director of poker put together there for it. So that certainly wasn't a consideration. But I think you're right. If, you know, hey, if I can, if I'm the ship leader right now in a very tough field of eight players and I get second place money, which feels pretty good to me, and I get the title, I get on the cover, and I can save 8 hours.
Yeah.
Go home, see my family, or I could jump in a cash game, or there's another tournament that was starting in an hour there. I could jump in that and play that. I mean, so I think all those things go into this now. So I don't think it's really so much people being afraid to play or wanting to quit early. I think it's just it's almost too fair now, the chop.
Yeah, and there's a lot of positives to just getting out of there now and getting into the cash games while they're juicy, not having to play till 4 a.m. to end this thing. You know, if you know you're going to probably finish third or fourth or something anyway because of the way it's going, or you're just so short stacked, why not just end it now and go into another event or go play some cash games for a couple hours instead of being here till 3 a.m. So there are reasons for everything, I think. But I don't know if it's, you know, I don't know if it's the way it's going. I mean, there could be some sort of, you know, somebody saying, hey, let's not chop, and then they all of a sudden it catches on and nobody wants to chop anymore. You know, who knows? But
well, also the other thing, and we kind of talked about this last week, I think the foul, the empire that Luke exploited,
the dark side,
the flaw in the empire, you know, he was able to shoot the little wombat thing down there and blow it up, right? I think in the ICM it's the people on the bottom, right? We kind of talked about this last week, and when the guy accepted a deal for less than the buy-in,
yeah.
So I think that's going to start happening more is when people, because we just talked about for 10 minutes here about a chip leader locking up a decent profit, right? But if I'm eighth and I get less than eighth place money, why would I want to agree to that deal, right?
Yeah, exactly.
There's no upside to me at that point. I mean, I might as well play it out and see if I can move up or something. So I guess because of that, I don't think this is going to be the norm now. I think it was kind of a blip here, but I could be wrong. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, we've had dozens of these now, and it's the first time it's ever happened like
not
this.
Not so much with eight, though.
Yeah, so I mean, no, I mean, we've had dozens of poker tour stops, and this eight ways the only one
right.
we've done with chop.
Two of them in a chop. Yeah, correct. Yeah.
So,
correct.
Yeah.
Yep. All right, well, moving on. The other fun thing that was really fun to watch here was the Antia Player of the Year race, and I mentioned it last week that Mike Postel, who I've known for a long time, used to be a great Mississippi grinder, and then he moved out to California. Wasn't really aware of the Antia Player of the Year, how close he was, until he just went on a tear at the beginning of the series, and then he was on a quest to win this. And get that Five Nights of Suite at Thunder Bow and a $250 food credit. And so I figured out the points after the day one of the main event and shot him a message in the morning. And I'm like, if you min cash 27th place, you will miss the Player of the Year by half a point.
Oh.
At a, like, 1367, he would have had 1366.6 or something like that.
Oh.
Hilarious. So I'm like, you better shoot for 26th. And he ended up finishing 9th. So, you know, barring any last late additions to any poker tour by the end of the month, which I seriously doubt, he will be our Player of the Year. And we're very excited about it, and a great guy, and to win it. So, but yeah, it was interesting watching that when he came back for day two, 41 players, 42 players came back, I believe. And just watching to see him hold on to get up there, and then actually went out with aces, I think, at night. So he actually could have gone even farther and put up his points.
Did anyone have the foresight to snap a photo of this gentleman so we could put him in the magazine?
Yes, we have plenty of photos.
Excellent. See, that's why we send you out there.
Yeah, so that was a great Dan Ross at Hold'em Radio. Takes a good job. Take care of all
cool.
that. But what was interesting is he got down to the bubble burst there, and he had enough points to be the Player of the Year. Dan from Hold'em Radio immediately tweeted it out, right? And then we were just sitting down for event 11. So we had two more events on that Sunday that people could play, right? And
right.
I told him, you know, hey, even if you finish 26th, somebody else could pass you if they play these other events, right? So I sit down at my table, and none other than number 3 in the Player of the Year race sits at my table. And that's why hey, watch out! If this guy wins this, he's going to pass you. So it was funny, a lot of people looking over their shoulders and stuff. And they were friends, and once that guy knocked out, he went over and told Mike. So I felt a little bit better at that point. But very interesting finish. It's kind of like this NASCAR chase for the whatever they
the
do
cup.
Now. Instead of just the old points thing, it actually had some more excitement. So had a lot of fun the Player of the Year race. So congratulations to Mike. And we talked earlier about the field for this. Now, the NAIA World Championship, we kind of figure attracts a little higher quality player because it's 1650 right after the World Series. This is $1,100 buy-in. But I went down for day one, kind of walked around the tables, saw some people that I knew. It was kind of funny. One of our cruise dealers was actually there, didn't know he was going to be there. Talked to him for a while. Then I went over to his table, and I looked over, and I'm like, that looks like Jerry Yang. And it certainly was. Jerry Yang was in the field, our former world champion and the Lee Child's villain, right?
Yeah, did he have the 8-8 hat on?
He did not. That's why he was kind of incognito because he didn't have the hat on. So, but he was also in a boot, too. Must have had some kind of a foot or ankle problem or something. Oh. But looked dapper. He had a nice little shirt on and stuff. So I'm like, yeah, it's Jerry Yang. And then I looked over, exact same table. Andrew Barber, who won the World Series Poker Horse event this year. And then Mike Possel, our new Player of the Year. All three of those at the same table on day one. Hate to be one of the other six people sitting at that table. So we had a lot of people like that. And then, unfortunately, my streak of cashing at Thunder Valley came to an end.
It had to happen, buddy.
No, I don't think it did.
I think it did. It happened.
It happened. Oh, man. But, so I played the last two No Limit events after, last week's show I was talking about. The first one was very interesting. No Limit Hold'em Marathon event, it was called. So we've heard about these Iron Man tournaments before, right? So
yeah.
Kind of the same thing, Iron Man Marathon. No breaks. So be sure you pee before you sit down. So I kind of knew that going in, but what I didn't realize, you start with 20,000 units in 40-minute levels. It was probably the best play outside of the main event in that entire field. It was great.
Yeah.
I played that for a while, and then unfortunately, my pocket sevens got cracked by Ace King. Not by an ace, not by a king.
Oh.
Runner Broadway.
Oh.
Worst way ever, right? So when I busted, re-entry was still open because this was such a great structure. Because they always do re-entry for the first five or six levels, something like that, right? So at 40-minute levels, they were still entering people. They started with like 60-some, and 36 players were left. And it was at least top nine that cashed, I think, in this, right? So I looked up. So here's my question. Do you re-enter at that point? Half the field is gone. You only have to fade another 20-some players, minus whoever else joins. You still got a decent chip stack when you sit down versus the blinds.
Huh. Were you intent on entering another tournament besides this one?
Well, there was a night event that was a $100. This was a $235. It's that consideration. The night event was a bounty event, too. So, you could pick up a little extra prize pool there. And quite honestly, the night tournament is a much, much softer field. This afternoon event attracted some really tough players. I mean, my table was really, really tough. I was happy I made it as far as I did there. Versus the bounty event at night, which I bubbled, which we'll talk about in a minute. So, those are my considerations there. I mean, so I decided not to. But I think it's kind of interesting that you don't get that often an opportunity to re-enter into a tournament that far into the tournament, right? And that close to the money.
It's pretty remarkable to have to field and went out before the re-entry period ended. That's because...
Like a good hour before.
Yeah, too. That's remarkable.
So, I mean, that was the other thing, too, is I could have sat around and waited another hour and say, hey, now we're down to 20 players. All right, now it's 50-50, right?
Yeah. Of course, you'd be entering with a much smaller stack than everyone else.
Right. But not terribly, because it's 40-minute levels, really. So, I mean, really, it would only be one more level up than what it was. And I forget what level it was at that point, but it wasn't that bad for 20K in chips.
Hmm. I don't know. I think you're asking the wrong person, because I don't, you know, I don't even want to enter a tournament. Never mind re-enter the same one.
True.
But, you know, monetarily, if it's something that doesn't bother you, the amount of money. How much would ninth and eighth play pay, though? I mean, if they're going to pay the same amount of money to get in.
Be, right. I mean, I think you'd have to probably finish seventh.
Yeah, so now you're qualifying there.
You make money, so yeah.
Probably
you don't know when the pay jump is going to happen either, too. You know, if you get a couple more people in, maybe they pay 12 at that point, you know, because it's all rolling, right?
Yeah.
You know, the prize pools weren't fixed, obviously, until the end of re-entry, so.
Probably would not re-enter.
All right, well, I did not, but there's a player at my table that went out before me, and he's a tournament, actually a casino manager, tournament director down at Turlock Poker Room, a great room a couple hours south, and met him the last time I was out Thunder Valley. Knocked out, went around to say hi to him, and didn't see him. And then when I sat down for the night tournament, I looked over, and he's got a massive stack in the marathon tournament.
Wow.
They ended up doing a, of course, chip equity deal, and he got second place money. So I told him the next day, I'm like, man, you made that second bullet work. So there were some people that did it.
That's awesome.
He got paid out, so pretty interesting.
If money's no object for me, I'd probably do it because I just want to keep playing, you know. But financially, I don't know if that's the wise thing to do. He got what he wanted, but it's more times than not, you're not going to do it.
Yeah.
So just take your money and run and go to a night event where you can make more money in the software.
So speaking of the night event, so you know, I had went out for beers with our cruise dealer Eric that was playing in the field after he got knocked out of the main event, and we were talking, and we decided that we have very similar styles of play. And I was telling him the reason I don't like to play bounty events is because I'm not really an aggressive player. I'm kind of a trapping kind of player. And so you lose a lot of value in a bounty tournament, right? Because you're not building up a stack early on and knocking people out. And this was $100 with a green chip bounty. So, you know, more than a fourth of the prize pool is going out in bounties.
Yeah.
If you're not in a position to knock people out, you're losing. I think you're losing a lot of value, right?
Yeah.
He had an interesting point, though. He's like, no. He's like, I think our style plays well in bounty events because people make some irrational decisions just to knock people out to get that bounty.
Well, that's a good point. So he's saying that you capitalize when they make those bad decisions.
Right. You're so you may not get as many bounties as other people are, but you're going to go farther in the events because people are going to play a little crazier, and you're playing a little. I hate to say tight, because that's not it, but, you know, showing up with the goods when there's a showdown, right?
Yeah.
Versus, you know, trying to push people off hands in hopes that they're going to bust out.
Yeah, that's a good point. You're not going to capitalize on the bounty part of it, but you're going to capitalize on the event part of it.
That's what he's saying. So, yeah. I mean, you know, hey, maybe you sacrifice some bounty value that I'm focused on, right?
Right.
For the idea that you're probably already going to propel farther in the tournament and have a better shot at getting one of the bigger caches, which, you know, if you finish a decent cache there, it doesn't matter how many bounties you got, you're still going to walk away with a profit, right?
Yeah, plus you are going to get some bounties along the way, probably,
right.
Sheer numbers and variance on it, so.
Yeah. You're not going to walk out with 10, but you might get 2 or 3.
Yeah. Yeah, because there were times where you took out some players who had some decent bounties on them when they were doing that. You know, what was that one called?
Oh, yeah, that progressive one.
Yeah, progressive one. You got some decent ones out of that, so I think he's probably right. You survive long enough, you'll get a few anyway, and then you'll also go further than most who are playing irrationally, so it's a good point.
Well, the funny thing is I texted him when I finished 13th, 11 got paid, and said, your theory works, almost. I had not a single bounty. Not a single bounty, but I finished 13th out of 80, I think it was 85, 86 players.
Wow.
So a deep run, no bounties, but also no money. And got it all in with ace-ace. Isn't that great when you're kind of short stacked? I had a bad hand, lost my stack, which usually happens, right?
Yeah.
Kind of limped along, looked down, two players already all in, and I'm like, all right, I'm going to call with any two cards at this point, right?
Yeah.
The equity. And ace, thank you. Thank you, Poker Jesus. Put that in. And of course, the flop comes queen, tray, and I'm like, this is awesome. Because now that takes a two pair out from people, right? And of course, one opponent turns over a deuce tray. Guess he felt priced in with the other all in, and then before I was even in, and picked up two bounties.
Wow.
Deuce tray on that kind of flop.
Brutal.
I never had that kind of luck.
Brutal.
Yeah. So anyhow, that ended my run of caching at Thunder Valley, but it was a good trip nonetheless. And one of the great things was that, you know, we work really hard at building relationships here at AntiUp. So a lot of our clients are actually friends, I think. And certainly Ben Irwin, the director out there, we are great friends, been for a long time. So it's kind of weird being on the road during Thanksgiving. Not that we have tremendous Thanksgiving traditions here, right. My wife and I. Fun stuff, but we don't have the big old turkey and 18 sides and, you know, falling asleep watching football kind of thing that everybody else does, right?
Right.
But, you know, I'm on the road by myself, and so his wife invited me over to have dinner with them, and it was a great dinner. Her sister's family is there, and had a great time, and then went over for dessert. We all went over to one of his floor staff's house for dessert and had a good time. So it was really nice that I feel like part of the Thunder Valley family now, and the Thunder Valley people think feel part of the AntiUp family now.
Cool.
And one more thing from Thunder Valley by the end of the year that I want to mention: the Western Senior Poker Series will end its season at Thunder Valley on December 6th. With a $400 championship event. I believe you got to be 50 or older to play in this. I could be wrong. But go to westernseniorpokerseries.com for all the details there. The top point getter will get an AntiUp cruise package, and the other top point getters will get Thunder Valley prizes, including rooms and food credits and things like that. So definitely support that event and get a chance to come on an AntiUp poker cruise.
Cool.
All right, so I was searching for stuff to add to the show today. I didn't think we really needed it, but then I caught this item, and it was just too rich to not talk about, I think, right?
Yep.
So we don't often see poker players' homes show up in these celebrity real estate news stories. You know, like, hey, Britney Spears has put her 20,000-square-foot mansion on the block for $178 million, right? You never see poker players in that, and when we do, I think it would be like, you know, like a Phil Ivey or Phil Hellmuth or somebody like that. But no, today, Andy Block.
Andy Block.
And no disrespect to Andy Block. He was like one of our first poker professional guests on AntiUp,
yep,
way back in the day, right?
Yep.
Nice guy, very nice guy. But he's not exactly who I thought would be in this item. But reality, I'm sorry, reality. Realty Today has reported that he's put his palatial Las Vegas mansion on the block. For a cool $9 million, the 10,591 square foot house is described as having a, quote, heavily masculine color palette of brown, gray, and black, with plenty of stones and tiles, a media room, and a game room with, of course, a professional poker table. It goes on to say it also has a jacuzzi and an infinity pool with views of the strip. I gotta say, I know Andy was kind of involved in the Full Tilt somehow, I don't know, at one point, so maybe he made a lot more money there. Obviously, he's won five-some million in just tournaments.
Yeah.
He was part of the MIT blackjack team as well, too, so... I guess I shouldn't be surprised that he has a $9 million home, but I'm a little surprised.
Well, maybe you got it on the ground floor when it was only $1 million. And...
That's right. Well, yeah, they did have a really bad. Vegas got really hammered in the housing crisis.
Yeah,
so it's possible there, but
wow.
But yeah, if you would have came to me and said, "Hey, a poker player selling his mansion or his or her mansion," let's to be fair, right?
Yeah.
And described all this minus the, well, even the heavy masculine, right? I don't know how many guesses you're going to give me. 400, 700, 1,100. I don't think I would have came up with Andy Block. Would you?
I know. No way. No way. I love that it's heavily masculine, too. Oh, yeah. What the hell kind of description is that? I don't think of Andy Block as heavily masculine.
Well, no, but I think the brown, gray, and black is kind of funny because you're watching these movies, and I don't know if you do this, but, you know, or if you flip around the channel during the afternoon and you get on any soap opera, right? Because everybody on a soap opera is like $9 million, right?
Right.
And you notice that the bachelors, their houses, you know, like the Batman guy, right? Bruce Wayne.
Right.
They're always these dark kind of, yeah, colors, right?
Yeah.
And then if it's a woman, it's all pinks and whites and reds and stuff, right? With big fluffy pillows and,
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of funny. So I think that's probably what they're saying. It's a very heavily masculine.
There are stereotypes for a reason, Scott.
There are. That's true. Right?
All right. Pretty funny. Hey, any updates?
I'll not be betting on it. So.
we got some stuff going on with our Restock the Shelves. Bankers Casino and Lucky Chances Casino in California. Orangeville Poker Tour and Ontario Aces Poker League in Canada. Shark Tank Poker Club in Columbus, Ohio. Harrah's Ak-Chin near Phoenix. Pearl River Resort in Mississippi and Best Bet Jacksonville and Derby Lane in Florida are the latest rooms to commit to hosting an event for Annie Up's Restock the Shelves Charity Food Bank Initiative with Blue Shark Optics on January 18th. I'll get to details of all our Restock events, including how you can volunteer for Team Annie Up by visiting annieupmagazine.com/restock and encourage your favorite poker room to host an event too.
Yeah, the ball's really rolling on this.
Yeah, every week you're adding like five or six or seven or whatever. It's great.
And again, a reminder, we do need Team Annie Up volunteers at all of these locations. Right. So if you're interested, go to the website and then let us know. We'd love to have you represent us there.
And Midnight Rose Hotel and Casino in Cripple Creek, Colorado will award one Annie Up Poker Cruise package for our January 24th sailing out of Los Angeles to the winner of its Annie Up Poker League, which runs through December 18th. So you still have time. And another package to the player who logs the most cash game hours until December 18th. For all those details on this promotion, Annie Up Poker Cruises, go to annieupcruises.com. All right, each week we spotlight a listener who calls our hotline at 206-424-6145 or emails us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. This week's prize is a 30-minute telephone lesson and workbook from Thomas Gallagher Casino Seminars, which specializes in poker odds and math at poker911.net. It comes from Charlie West. I'm new to serious poker this year and am a 5,000-year-old chick. Her name is Lucy, apparently. I originally only played tournaments and randomly stumbled into some chops and low ITMs in a little place while our extended business travel. So it whetted the appetite, so I started reading everything I could on Hold'em, joined the training site, etc. I live in an unenlightened state where home games, let alone internet poker, is frowned upon, so I practice on the free sites and hit the live casinos from time to time. So I started reading your magazine a couple of months ago when I picked it up at a casino. I totally enjoyed it, and from that I learned you had the longest-running poker cast on the interwebs. So I decided to give it a listen. I've listened to the most recent months and then started from the beginning and just listened to your anniversary podcast and puts in parentheses, missed up. Aww. And I can't wait to hear the next 9 years worth. I want to thank you for the role you played in a really decent bankroll-enhancing chop the other night. I think attitude plays a huge role in addition to tight aggressive play and really good cards and how well we do. I rolled into the tournament after a six-hour drive featuring an all-anti-up binge listen. I was laughing half the way, got great food for thought, and had the right attitude walking into the card room. So thank you. I really mean that.
Aww.
That's really cool.
No, I like when we get the letters like this. And usually it's from these folks that just discover us. Our long-time listeners have given up on it. They're like, yeah, you guys are idiots, but we still listen to you, right?
Right.
But these new listeners get in there like, this is really cool, and I gotta tell you that. So every once in a while, we like to put that on just to make us feel better about it.
Yeah, and just a reminder that once you laughing half the way, that was my half, what she was laughing at.
Yeah.
Just so you know.
Right. Now all the listeners out there are laughing at home as well, too. No,
that's problem. Right. That's what I do.
Completely incorrect on that statement.
Find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com. We'll have Hollywood Casino Toledo Director of Poker, Elliot Schechter, tell you how he would have ruled. Comes from our buddy, Dr. Frank. In a tournament in a Florida card room, two players were heads up after the flop. The first bets 2,000. The second player throws out a 5,000 chip and simultaneously says 500. The floor confirms with the second player that his real intention was to raise to 5,000. The floor allowed the raise to 5,000 to stand. The other player folds to the raise. It seems to me that it should have been a call. The second player verbalized an amount that was not allowed and probably should have been ignored at the same time he threw out a single oversized chip, which is usually a call. No one complained, but if I had been the first player, I might have been upset at being raised off my hand.
Elliot says, the player who threw out the oversized chip and verbalized an amount less than the current betting limit should have been limited to a call of 2,000. The point of having and enforcing oversized chip rules, or any rules for that matter, is to prevent having supervisors try to determine the intent of a player when something like this occurs. When a chip is thrown and an amount is verbalized, there should be enough information to act on without also having to ask the player what he was trying to accomplish.
Yeah. Not much to say about that, I guess.
Yeah, you know, I get why people think that, you know, the 5,000 are what Frank was saying here, but that's the big thing, is trying not to get into the minds of people, because we know how crazy people are, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And trying to figure out what people mean is almost impossible, and I certainly don't want our floor staff in any poker room to ever have to figure that out, so you do the best you can with the information you have.
Absolutely. We have a new O'Malley's move. Where do you hear the game he's playing this week?
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we are seated in a six-handed, no-limit Omaha 8 cash home game. We are a semi-regular in this game and know three of the other players at this table. The blinds are 50 cents, $1. We bought in for 100 and have 175 in front of us when this hand comes down. The blinds post, the under-the-gun folds, and we look down at the ace of spades, jack of hearts, 10 of clubs, 4 of clubs. This is a borderline hand, but with 175 big blinds, we're going to make the call and see if we can hit a flop. The cutoff calls, button folds, small blind completes, and the big blind checks. Pretty standard for this table. It's been timid pre-flop, and then the aggression kicks in post-flop. With $4 in the pot, we see a very interesting flop. The queen of clubs, 6 of clubs, deuce of clubs comes down. The small blind checks, and the big blind makes a $5 bet into the $4 pot. Remember, it's no limit. We've flopped a flush, but it's not anywhere near the nuts, and we currently need a 3 for the nut low. The opponent we're up against plays the game well, but is far too loose. He sits with $80. We're going to call and reassess the situation on the turn. Everyone else folds. The turn is pretty ugly. The 4 of hearts comes down, counterfeiting any chance we had at a good low. With $14 in the pot, our opponent makes the same $5 bet. So, are we conceding here? Raising? What's the move?
All right, it's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast@antiepmagazine.com. This week's prize is 1 month of free poker strategy videos from one hand at a time. Home of poker instructional videos online. Antiep listeners save $30 by registering at onehandatatime.com/antiup. And this week comes from Rudy Mockel. Might be one of the new favorite names of our
listeners.
Yeah,
that's a cool name.
All right, so let's see. I'm trying to figure out what he's playing here. Looks like a tournament of some sort. That's not giving me much information. But we are at the, 4,400 ante level.
Okay.
So must be a tournament, right?
Can't yeah, be. Yeah, he's not playing for that kind of cash. I'm listening to our show.
Yeah, and let's see, he has almost 237,000 units. Second in chips at the table, the big check stack has just shy of 403, and a couple short stacks around 31 and 56. And it looks like 1, 2, 3, 5 players.
Okay.
All right. Let's see, the cutoff, who is the chip leader, raises to 9,955. And it folds around to our hero in the big blind with queen of diamonds, queen of spades.
So the cutoff was Scott Long. Raising that funny amount to make an odd-looking stack. Make it like it's bigger than it really is. All right, so we have queen.
And I'll pause here while you're trying to figure it out. I kind of wish we had a little bit more information here, because it sounds like we're in a tournament. We're five-handed, so I don't know whether that means this is the final table or we're getting ready for a table to break.
Right. It's either going to from two tables to one, or the final table is probably what's going to happen, right?
Right.
You can't have 15 players out there, so it'd be 7 and 8. So we're at the final table.
Without knowing, you know, how close we are to the money and stuff, because one consideration is that we're up against the chip leader, right?
Right.
And we have a couple short stacks, so not that means I'm going to fold queens, but it's a consideration as this hand continues. But go ahead.
Well, normally we make a 3x raise on that raise, but there's a lot of money out there already. I mean, there's 2,000 in blinds. There's a 2,000 small blinds, so that's 4, and then another 4 is
counting our big.
Yeah, so 8, and then so I mean, there's, you know, a good 15,000 out there already.
18,000.
Yeah. So yeah, 18,000. So I mean, I don't know. I'd probably make it like 35,000 to go or so. You know, I mean, three times, he's already essentially bet 10, so that's 30,000. I'd probably bet a little more than that just because there's a lot of money out there and I really like this hand and I don't want some random, you know, just because he's in the cutoff, you know, raising or whatever. So I think I might make it more than 30,000. Maybe 35 or so, maybe 40. I got enough to do that with.
Yeah, I got to say, I love my hand, but I hate the spot I'm in here.
Yeah.
Because we're going to be out of position against the chip leader. That's the rest of the hand, right?
Yeah.
But he's also racing from the cutoff in a shorthanded game, so his range is super wide.
Right.
So I don't necessarily just want to call the raise and try to get tricky with him necessarily. I do want to find out whether he is messing with us. If he's messing with us, we take down the pot, and that's a pretty nice pot, right?
Yeah.
But if he calls or re-raises, then I assume this is online, too, because we have all this great information here, right? It's online. He's guaranteed to have aces or kings, right?
Yeah.
Joking.
No, but really, though, I mean, you're making the right point here, though. You're going to be out of position. He could have any two cards. If you don't make it expensive enough, he can call with any two cards, and you're really vulnerable to a hand like that with just queens. So I really want to try to take it down here or make him pay a lot with crap cards. Maybe he does have a big hand. Maybe he re-raises us and we get it all in and we see what's going on or something. But I just don't think that just calling is a big mistake, and making it affordable for him is a big mistake, I feel like. So
I would say it's a big mistake. It's a mistake, I think. But because here's the problem, I guess, with the raise. And I'm totally on team raise here, right? So I'm not trying to talk anybody into calling. But the problem with team raise here is that what are we going to raise that is not going to be harmful to our stack, but that this guy's probably not going to call? He's got 403,000 chips, right? He's put 10,000 in this pot. So you're right. The legitimate raise here is probably 30,000. I don't know if this guy folds for 20,000.
He might. He didn't get to 400,000 playing like an idiot either. So I don't know. He might. 35,000 might make him say, all right, screw it. The other thing, too, is he has to think about what it's going to mean on that flop, too, when he knows we're going to bet now. If he doesn't hit the flop really hard, you know, now he's just throwing away 20 grand because he knows we're going to bet like 60 after this or 50. So, you know, you got to think about streets down the road when you're playing Hold'em and Hold'em. So.
Right. Well, I guess my concern is that we can't necessarily rationalize this guy like this way. He could be thinking that I'm thinking, right, and just call whatever, which means the flop. There's no flop that I feel safe, other than maybe, obviously, a queen, right?
Yeah.
Because if he has any two cards, now we don't know what he's playing. I mean, a normal situation like this where someone raises and you re-raise and they call, they're going to have big cards. So if big cards don't come, then you can kind of feel somewhat safe with your queens, right?
Yeah. So are you saying that when someone has a huge stack, they play irrationally?
No, I'm just saying, all I'm saying is it's a bad spot to be in. We're still going to raise because we need to. I just don't think our raise of 30,000 is going to get this guy to fold other than just absolute steal cards.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well,
he has anything that he thinks that he can flop on us, I think he's going to call, and that makes it dangerous for us the rest of the hand.
Yeah, we still have to play optimally.
Not saying not to do it. I'm just saying it's a tough spot is all I'm saying.
You just have to play optimally still, though. So I still would make it a little more expensive than normal.
And just, I assume if we do something crazy like go all in, then that takes care of the problem. But then if he wakes up with aces or kings, then that's
right.
So
I want to get value for these queens too, especially playing shorthanded like this. I mean, I want to get value for him, so I'm going to take this pot down now if I can, and if not, I'm going to make him pay to see a flop.
It'd also be nice to know what kind of history we've had with these players already too, you know, and how our style is too. I mean, if we've been raising a lot out of the big blind, then absolutely I'm raising here, raising even more because that looks like I'm just stealing when I have a great hand. So. But if we haven't, if we've always been not defending our big blind, obviously a raise here is going to be tough for us to get value.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. So our hero raises to 27,850. So in the ballpark of what we were going to suggest.
Yeah,
right?
I guess. Yeah, whatever. I mean, yeah, that's probably what normally, if you're just running through the motions, you'd probably do that. You'd bet 3X, which is, but that's not 3X. That's less than 3X. So that's 2.7x or something. So I don't know. I guess that's okay, but I'd bet more than that.
So I split hairs here on a $27,000 raise.
Well, I mean, it's 2,000 more less than what it should have been, and if I'm thinking 35, it's almost 10,000 less than what I would have made it. But yeah, it's hard to fold 17,000 you know, for 17,000 in that flop,
well,
but maybe
that was
for 25.
From the beginning of the hand, right?
It's yeah, that's why it's not enough bet. It's not a big enough bet, I think. Who knows? Plus, maybe he does fold for 25 or 26. More.
Well, he doesn't because the hand goes on. So, but I guess that was my point. Is I don't know what raise to make there that this guy's going to fold, other than his best hands, which he's never going to fold here, right?
Right.
If he's got suited connectors here, he's probably going to call up to 50,000, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe, right?
I don't know. That's a lot. But maybe.
All right. I guess we'll find out. All right. Our hero is ranging the villain as a strong, suited Broadway 9-9 plus king-queen off as the bottom of his range.
Given Scott's comments about the size of this guy's stack and the ability to...
The cutoff steal? No, cutoff steal. Really
he
do
could
honestly
have worse hands than that.
I could be wrong. But.
Yeah, he could have worse hands than that.
Yeah. So this is what I'm going to be scared about on the flop. If it comes all trash, we're going to feel emboldened, and then this guy's going to turn over Deuce Trey and knock you out of the tournament. That's still bitter. All right, so the flop, just shy of 60,000 in the pot, comes 4 of diamonds, 8 of clubs, queen of clubs.
Wow. Whew.
Dodge that bullet, right?
Nice. Okay, so how much is in the pot now, are we thinking?
Just shy of 60,000. 59,000.
59,000, okay. Well, okay. We have top set. We have the absolute nuts. I don't know if we need to protect as well as I normally would say, but there's the mortal nuts. There's the sorted nuts. There's mixed nuts.
Mixed nuts.
There's some other nuts that I'm not going to talk about.
Well, the absolute nuts.
Yeah, the absolute nuts.
Best possible hand. This is the absolute best hand.
Well, there are other kinds of nut hands that
I know what you mean.
We you can make
flop Broadway.
Right.
It's not the absolute nuts.
Here we go.
Just having fun with it, Jace.
Let's see. There are two clubs on the board. There are connectors in here, although they're far apart, but you can make a straight on the next card with a 4 and an 8.
6-7 suited.
And an 8, Jack 10, you can make a straight with. So we are going to have to protect. I think we need to bet, about 40 or so, 45,000.
Yeah, I was going to say minimum half the pot.
Yeah, oh yeah. So
I like the bigger bet because it looks like we're trying to protect, and which we kind of sort of are, but we've got a monster.
Yep. But I don't mind.
I love to see the guy re-race us here, right?
Yeah.
We're trying to steal his pot.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm definitely... I'm thinking 40. 40 is a good bet, I think.
Let's do it.
All right. We bet 20.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah.
That's not a lot. I mean, first, you know, you're betting a third of the pot. So any draws now and with implied odds and the guy's playing against the second largest stack, you know, he could take all your chips now.
It goes back to what I was talking about, too. We don't know what this guy's thinking, but he's got a lot of chips to play with here.
Yeah.
So if you're giving him a chance to catch up to you for 20,000, he's not going to be stupid with this money. He's just thinking that, you know, if he can catch you here, he's going to stack you. If he stacks you, gosh, this thing's over, right?
Here's the other thing that gets back to my original point about preflop. Let's say he made it 35 instead of 27.8.
Okay.
The other guy calls now. Now that's you've got
now the pot's bigger, right?
Pot's huge now.
Right.
And now you can justify making it 70,000 on the flop.
Right.
This guy is not gonna chase. You know, and I'm sure, okay, we've got top set and everyone's gonna bitch at us for saying, oh, you want to extract value, you don't want him to fold here. I know I don't want him to fold here, but the more money in the pot, the more money
he's
I can
not
win.
Really making a mistake at 20,000, right?
Right.
He's 3-1 on his money.
Yeah. But now if you get 75,000 in this pot or even more, you know, because there was 80,000 in the pot preflop. Now you make it 60,000 to go, which is a proper bet. He's not calling 60,000 here to try to hit a gutter, right? You know. So I think that's another reason that we have to think about future streets, not only what you're calling on future streets when you're behind, but what you're trying to stay ahead of when you're ahead. I think the more bigger bet earlier would have helped in this situation, but now betting only a third of the pot is definitely a mistake. Okay, so you want to get as much money as you can for your top set, but you also don't want these crappy hands to get there because you were trying to get greedy and get right. only 20 grand out of the guy.
Right. Yep, exactly. All right, well, the cutoff obviously calls.
Yeah.
And so now our hero is ranging him about the same with possible flush draws, and he says 9-9 plus feel good here.
What does he mean by that? He means that... What feels good about? I don't understand.
I guess if he has nine pair of nines or higher,
then he feels good about that.
I guess, I don't know. I didn't write it. I'm just reading.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out what you mean. What you think?
But anyhow, I guess the point is, I don't know how you change his range here. We're betting a third of the pot on a board that's draw heavy.
Yeah.
I don't think his range changes at all. And we thought his range was bigger than our hero thought to begin with. So.
Right.
I don't think this changes anything. No. I don't think we've learned anything at all by this bet.
No. Could be Jack 10. Could be Jack 10 of clubs. Could be anything. Because Jack 10 is worse than his King Queen off that he originally said.
Right, right.
So it doesn't narrow it. If anything.
Jack 10's a great steel hand, too.
Yeah.
All right. So go to the turn. We're just shy of 100,000 pot, 99,700 for you exact people out there. And the turn is the ace of spades. So our board now is four diamonds, eight of clubs, queen of clubs, ace of spades.
I'm not checking. And the reason being is, let's say we had ace king and we raised preflop.
It's a great card for us, right?
Right. What would we do after that crappy flop with ace king? We would bet out. Now the guy calls. Well, now an ace comes. I have no reason to think this guy has an ace because if he has an ace, unless he has ace queen, which would mean he had the case queen, unless it has to be exactly the ace of clubs and some other club in his hand, you're narrowing him down pretty narrow there to do that. That if he hadn't, he would have folded preflop, or if it was a crappy ace, and if it's a good ace, he would have re-raised. And on that flop, he would have folded to any bet if he missed. So I just think that we have excellent chance of representing that ace now, because it looks like we could have had ace king, made a weak C bet, got called, and now we've hit our ace. Now we can bet. If this guy has an ace, we have three queens. Why would we check here? So right. I'm definitely betting this strong now, because now this guy came along. He could be on a draw, and since he said it's a possible flush draw or even a straight draw if he had Jack 10, now I want to put the hammer down.
And here's the thing, is I've kind of eliminated ace-ace from his range now.
Oh, yeah.
Because he didn't re-raise his pre-flop. He didn't raise his on the flop when it's a dangerous board, right? So the only way this card hurts is if he has pocket aces. I guess it gives him a couple more straight outs, but you know that's really rough, right?
Yeah.
So at this point, yeah, you're right. There's no reason to slow down and give him a free card to catch some weird thing that's going to hurt us.
No. You know? And the other thing, too, is he just called, so how do you know he doesn't have a set of eights? And you've got this guy dead to rights to one out.
That'd be awesome, right?
And he's going
to
go whatever. So you got a bet here. I'd bet 50, 60,000 here.
I'm gonna bet more now because I bet too little on the flop. I'm gonna correct that mistake now and really try to get some value. So I don't know, 60.
Yeah, there's 100 in the pot, 50, 60. That's fine with me.
At least 50, right?
But, yeah.
Yeah. All right, our hero checks.
Oh.
And no surprise, our opponent checks behind.
Oh, that's brutal. Because now you're just giving him a free shot to hit whatever you might have been drawing at, you know?
I will say the only advantage to this, and I'm certainly not advocating ever doing this, but, you know, sometimes your mistakes can turn into profit, right?
Yeah.
Is if a safeguard comes, and at this point I'm not really sure what the safeguard is, but if a safeguard comes on the river, we might get a loose call from him thinking if we bet that, you know, we're scared of that ace. And he might raise us, just thinking that he's coming alive or something like that. It's really the only bright spot I can find in this check scenario.
You know, there's no safe card other than quads for us, because every other card that can come that doesn't pair the board makes a straight anywhere.
Right, you're right, it does.
Every card now makes a straight.
I was trying to think about that when I was talking. I can't figure out a way it didn't, right?
Yep. So even a nine makes a straight for Jack 10.
No, a deuce or a trade.
No, it makes a wheel. He's got the ace.
Well, if you have two cards in your hand, right? Yeah, all right. I see what you're saying. Connecting cards.
Right. If he had something crazy like 3-5 of clubs.
Right, you're right. You're right.
So he's going for the flush draw and off, backs into the wheel now. So really, any next card could give anybody a straight. So I can't imagine why
so
we would check there.
Fold up or get our queen to feel safe, right?
Yeah. Why would we check there?
Yeah, that's tough, right?
Yeah, I would never check, ever.
Plus, we're giving up value. It doesn't even matter. I mean, are we really trying to trick this guy into the betting now on this board? All right, well, our hero says, I was prepared to reshove here and felt he would bet all his ace-x hands and his flush draws. I was prepared to be cautious on the river if a club fell. When he checked back, I felt his range for calling a 3-bet and a C-bet, then checking back was nut-flush hands. some Broadway weak flush draws, king-king, jack-jack, and maybe 10-10.
Nah, those hands re-raise. He's a chip leader. They re-raise pre-flop. King-king, jack-jack is probably re-raising pre-flop.
Yeah, I think those pairs are out of the range as well, too.
Yeah. And then why would he bet flush draws a one card to come and he wouldn't re-raise you on the flop or whatever? Why is he's going to get a free card to make his flush on you? Why would he bet?
Right, and open up and get put himself at risk and push it off hand.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. No, none of that.
This is screaming flush draw to me now, and maybe it's a flush draw that has straight possibilities as well too.
Yeah. Or straight, right. Or that Jack 10 thing that we talked about.
Well, yeah, but that's a straight possibility.
Yeah. No, I know, but I'm just saying.
Yeah, it's definitely a straighter flush draw working here, and highly likely both.
Yeah.
And you're right, there's not going to be a good card coming here unless we boat up or it's a queen. All right, so the river, remember, we're still at 99,700. Is the Jack of Spades. So our final board is four diamonds, eight of clubs, queen of clubs, ace of spades, Jack of Spades. So we don't need to worry about the flush. But what, a king 10 got there?
Yep, 9-10.
10-9, yep.
Yep, 9-10 got there. And that's my favorite hand. I'm just saying that people love to play their favorite hands. It's my favorite hand. So people love to play their favorite hands. 9-10 is a five-handed. That's definitely a hand you would raise with if you're chip leader in the cutoff. King-10, possibly. And then that 20,000 bet isn't going to get him off the hand, you know, if he's got a gutter and an over.
Massive implied odds if you hit that jack,
yep.
Right?
Yeah,
you know you're probably going to stack.
And then you gave him the river for free, so it's still only costing 20. It's like costing him 10 a street, which is nothing to a 400,000 chip leader. So
yeah, I'm not feeling good about this now.
No, not at all. I'm going to check.
What do we check?
Now I'm going to check just because there's enough money out there. If we show it down, be like, he didn't get value for it. But you know what? You know what I mean? It's a cautionary tale. So I would check.
And there's a possibility he's going to. Try to steal light, right? And
yeah,
it's a decent amount that we can call it, and might get more value out of it than betting out. So, bad spot though.
Yeah, I would check.
All right, our hero bets 66,467. Love the bet, by the way. cutoff raises to three shoves, so he puts us all in if we're going to call.
No way. I just, there's no way.
Too much, right?
There's just no way. Yeah. I mean, where was that bet on the turn?
Mangled this hand, and we need to get out of here with as much chips as we possibly can and regroup.
I would have done that on the turn. 66,000. Why bet it now on the river when a hand that can beat you now got there? You know, I mean, yeah, pocket aces could, but there's no way a guy had pocket aces. So you can rule that out on the turn. So you still had essentially the nuts on the turn. Where was that bet a street ago when this guy would have definitely folded for 67,000?
Yeah.
I got to fold. Yeah, I still have a... How much do I have left?
Street too late on that. Well, you only put 57 in this pot, I think. About 50,000. So we still have 180 or so.
Oh, before he bet the 66 grand.
So we're... Oh, yeah, before the 66, right? So, yeah, 120. 120.
Yeah, so I would fold. 120 is still plenty to play. Big blind's 4,000.
Us behind the small blind and dwarfing the two short stacks.
Yeah, I would just fold. I would just fold. You got three queens. It's great. You should have played it differently. But at this point, the only thing you could beat now is a bluff. Is he really going to bluff all in and risk? He's a chip leader. What does he have to risk all in for? So the only hand you beat is a bluff.
I mean, I suppose there's an argument that he's shoving because we slowed down and showed weakness. And so it could be a bluff, but it's a very effective bluff.
Yeah.
We're wrong, we're out. And he knows it. So it's a leverage bluff if it is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those hands where a good player has to say, you know what, I don't believe you, but I can't call you.
Yeah, I just can't. I can't think that we're ahead. For him to bluff, it would be a little more, I would think it'd be a little more creative. You know, I guess the shove...
Well, yeah, I don't know again, like I said, we slowed down, so unless we were trying to trick him into, you know, laying a trap, but as scary as that board is, no one would ever think of laying a trap there, right? So now I'm thinking that our villain here is a pretty smart player and knows that that's the weirdest check ever there, and he probably has something, he could have something kind of weakish here, but knows that there's no way this... second in chips is when I'm going to go out when there's so many short stacks left here.
Well, here's the deal. If we had a hand, why would we bet 60? You know what I mean? We bet 66,000. If we had a hand that could be bluffed off, why would we bet? You know, I don't think this guy's going to bluff somebody who bets the river. You bluff him when he checks the turn, and then you bluff him on the turn. You float him. But now you're waiting until he bets amount of money where he might not be smart enough to know he should fold?
I mean, you weren't... I don't know.
I think that it can't be a bluff.
I would think he could be drawing on that turn. Still a possibility he got there on this river, too, but...
On the turn?
But if he, no, on the river.
Oh, on the river. Yeah, on the river. That's what I think. I think he got there.
If he got here on the river, would he really shove on us here when we only bet 66,000?
Well, because a re-raise would make it 180,000 and we only have 122 left. So he's just shoving all in because he can't fold.
It says he raised 354.
Yeah.
So he's raising 122,000.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay.
Well. I just can't. It'd be one thing if we checked and then he just shoves to bluff. But if he's going to bluff us, why doesn't he bluff us on the turn? And then if he's going to bluff us now, I mean, it's a bad bluff if we're betting a third of the pot, two-thirds of the pot on the river. He might not be smart enough to know he needs to fold here. You know what I mean? He might be just like, I have to call. And then your bluff doesn't work. Your bluff has to be effective. I don't think that's effective bluffing.
I don't know. I think it could be an effective bluff against a lot of players. Probably not the smartest players, but it could be. I'm not saying I would do it, but...
I mean, if you have a hand to bet...
My point is that there's no way we can call this, right?
Yeah, I don't think we can call.
And so it doesn't matter. I mean, the bet has made it to the point that we can't call.
Right. I would have checked the river, too.
Yeah. All right. Obviously, our hero calls, because that's how the hand of the week goes. he says, when he shoved over me, I felt he was betting on either a missed flush draw or he hit a set or a hand as weak as ace-jack. Well, that's possible, I guess, ace-jack. But I don't think he would have bet. He wouldn't have given us a free card on the turn when we checked with an ace, right?
No.
So, yeah. So, all right. Of course, we show our queen of diamonds, queen of spades. Cutoff shows a ten of spades, nine of hearts.
Oof.
Puke in my mouth. Is there a way I could have put him on range and included this hand? Am I not calling three bets wide enough? But I think we kind of talked about that, right?
Yeah, we talked about it. He's, you know...
You gotta think about his chip stack and you know, again, it's not that you're reckless, as we mentioned. It's just that you have some chips to play with.
Position's huge there too.
Somebody, I mean, when you have that many chips, you got so many implied odds on a lot of hands.
Yeah.
And particularly if we are down to five-handed in this, then you know, knocking the person second in chips out of the tournament is massive at this point.
Here's the deal. All right, so let's just go through the hand real quickly. He has 9-10, he raises in the cutoff, which is what I would do with 9-10. You re-raise him. So he's like, you know what? I got position on this guy. He could have ace-king. I'm going
to
call him float.
He's trying to steal my raise.
Yeah, he just all kinds of stuff. So I'm the chip leader.
That's what I'm saying.
And I'm in position. I'm going to call. So he calls at 9-10. Flop comes where he's got a gutter. And you only bet 20 grand.
That's the key right there. If we would have bet 40 there, he's gone.
Yeah, he's probably gone if you bet what we said.
20, he's like, all right.
Yeah. And even if he's not,
I stack him.
Even if he's not gone, okay, you bet 40 and he calls. You got a big enough pot now. Of course, if you raise more, like I said, pre-flop, you might have gotten him out. If not, you have a bigger pot you're playing for.
In any turn bet, he's got it.
Any turn bet, he's gone.
Or you've made him make a mistake, which is really what you're trying to do.
Right. So either way... You go through these hands, you let 9-10 get there. And it's one thing to be results-oriented. It's another to know what your mistakes are. And it doesn't matter what the two cards are that he made the straight. What we're saying is that when you got to that turn, that ace, there's no reason to check that ace hoping that this guy is going to go crazy and bet now. He only called you on the flop. So even if he's drawing, he didn't get there. So let's bet, get some money for value. Five-handed set of queens, get some value for this hand. And the bet, you get that pot instead of going broke and losing. Now, there's four players left, and you're out when you were guaranteed second place if you played normally. You know, just optimally
right,
ABC poker.
I didn't know what it was, yeah. But, yeah.
Yeah, if it was five-handed. I don't need to put him on 9-10. The fact is that we let a hand get there that shouldn't have gotten there for at least the price that you gave him. That turn bet is when you get the turn. I always think of the turn as the hammer, you know. That's the street. Put the hammer down on turn. The turn is the street. You want to get some value on the flop and then end the hand on the turn if you are thinking this guy's drawing at anything. End it. End the hand. That's too bad.
Yeah.
Well, Rudy, at least you got a really cool name.
And a prize.
And a prize. So there you go. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the table.
Anti-Up is a production of antiupmagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@antiupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.